Welcome, everybody. This is Monday, September 30th, 2013. And this is Wynn Free and Terry Brown and Hives, you have such a weird name. Hives Minderhorn. Minderhaus. What does Minderhaus mean? What does Minderhaus mean?
Less rude. It's a name from a city in Belgium.
All right. Okay. Are you not from Belgium, are you?
In the 1600s, my family came from Belgium and then moved to Holland.
I see. And you didn't grow up in Holland, did you?
Yes, I did.
Did you wear wooden shoes?
I wore my dad's, but that was for seconds before I could understand.
Well, you mean the old people wore wooden shoes and the young people didn't anymore, right?
Correct. It's kind of like watered away. It's you still have people walking there on wooden shoes these days, but it's just the old folks.
Why do they wear wooden shoes? I think they would be uncomfortable.
Yeah, to me they were. But I don't get it either. I don't know.
I guess you never have to replace the soles, right?
Oh yeah, you have to. Oh yeah, certainly, because they wear. It's the soles wear.
Even the wood wears down, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
We should do an internet search, and we should say, why do people from Holland wear wooden shoes?
Yeah,
there must be some strange explanation. But we're going to do an open mic tonight. And I was talking to Terry just before we got on. And we were discussing the idea of having to do everything perfectly. And that the people are afraid that if they don't do something perfectly, somebody's going to yell at them. Somebody is going to be mad at them. Somebody's going to be critical of them. And, of course, Terry has that kind of thing in her, except when she channels. She's getting better. But, you know, she has that, like, she'll relate it to her childhood and her mother not accepting her and actually sending her to an orphanage when she was young. And, you know, Terry would, no matter, she would do her best, but she would be imperfect in her mother's eyes. Like, Terry, are you there?
Yeah, it actually wasn't an orphanage, it was a foster home. And it happened right after she was going to throw me the biggest, best birthday party, and she kept raving about this party she was going to throw for me, and then she threw me the party, and all my little cousins came. By 10, she picked me up from the foster home, and she put a brand new dress on me that she was so proud of, and then she gave me a bunch of lemonade, or a bunch of ginger ale, like about 11 cups of ginger ale to take out to the people in front. And the porch had rocks on it, and my little feet stepped on these crooked rocks, and my body tilted because the rocks were tilted, and the ginger ale fell over, and I didn't even drop one cup, but it all went up my dress. And she started screaming, and then she wouldn't talk to me during the party, and I never went to the party. I just stayed in the living room trying to dry the dress. And she just scolded me, and every time she looked at me, she had a frown on her face, and then she took me back to the foster home afterwards and put me up for adoption. And so, and then somebody tried to adopt me, and then they gave the papers to her to sign, and she wouldn't sign them. And so I eventually went to live with my grandmother for a while. But anyway, I got the idea that if I made a mistake, it was all over.
Right. And, you know, sometimes you still have that idea, right?
Oh, yeah. But, you know, if somebody gets mad at me, then it's probably all over, and they'll probably just send me away.
Well, this is going to be a funny call, okay? Because this is going to be, I said it's an open mic, but if you guys have the courage, I hope you do, or else I'm going to sit here twiddling my thumbs, you've got to think of sometime in your life that you did something imperfect, or where other people thought it was imperfect, and it created some kind of fear of being imperfect. And because this is a big one, because this idea of being perfect it makes us afraid. Everyone's going to judge us if we do something wrong. Now, the only person here that might qualify for perfection is Hives. Hives, are you there?
Well, Hives, perfect does not exist in reality, so...
Now, tell me, now, you don't have to do this, but I thought since you present yourself so well, you always look good. You always are balanced. You always have a loving energy for other people, that it creates the illusion that you're perfect. And you don't have to do this, but I thought we could start out with you sharing something you did that was imperfect, that got you in trouble, or that didn't get you in trouble, but you were afraid of, if you're willing to. And maybe nothing will come to mind, but let's try it.
Well, one thing I want to share is that, you know, working as an electrician, you know, I work for different bosses, different managers, but then, you know, you have those managers who complement your strong points, and then you have those just the opposite who fall over the weak points you've done. And that is a big difference. You know, the compliments motivate you, and talking negative about little things is just the other way around. So that is something I learned from. But to give you an example of something I did wrong, I do many wrong things. Just ask my wife.
Maybe we should have her come on.
Yeah.
She'll probably say, you spend too much time on your conference call.
I touched that hot wire recently.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
is that Donald?
I think it was on. He muted himself again, I guess.
Okay. He said that I touched that hot wire recently.
Right.
I don't think it was a mistake. I think it was meant to happen.
Uh-huh.
Anything else? Mm-hmm.
No, that's it.
See how perfect he is?
No.
Hot wires. Well, let's see. I was going to play a song that is different from most of the songs that I play. You know, I used to write songs. I'll probably write songs again. And I know people are asking me to put my songs out. And, you know, I want to do it, but I want to do it right. I want to really have enough money to make some really good recordings and put it out like a real product. Because I know I'm a really good songwriter, and I know my songs. I write songs. I used to write songs like I talk now. I couldn't talk that in those days. I was too shy and reserved. So I put all of this in songs. And one of my things that was part of my training wheels in learning how to write songs and learning how to be in the public was this long time ago. And somebody took me to a discotheque. They don't call them discotheques anymore. In New Jersey. In Greenwood Lake, New Jersey. Because they knew the guy who ran the discotheque. And they just had top 40 bands. And he said, this guy's really good. Why don't you put him in between the bands? And so the guy asked me to play a couple songs. And he said, well, you write really good songs, but you're too quiet. Nobody's going to listen to you. And so then he said, well, how much do you charge? And I said, $25. And that was, and for me at that time, that was $25 was probably more like $75 now. So he agreed. He said, okay, I'll put you on tonight. And I think it was because he felt sorry for me. And so I got up on the stage, and I think I was up to my third song, and nope, he was right. I could have been invisible. I could have been not there. Nobody was listening. And then something inside of me clicked and said, I've got to connect with these people. How am I going to connect? And so I looked at the crowd, and it was almost like I didn't even think about it. Because if I thought about it, I never would have done it, okay? It was just, I looked at the crowd, and I said, I'm going to do a primal scream. And at that time, I had been studying all these alternative therapies, and primal screams was this one crazy therapy that I think the guy's name was Dr. Janoff. And I let out this scream at the top of my lungs to the audience. And suddenly, everybody stopped what they were doing and looked at me. And I remember having this moment of incredible fear. What am I going to do now? Say, you want to listen to one of my sensitive songs? No, that's not what I did. I looked at them and I said, okay, guys. Now it's your turn to scream back. One, two, three. And everybody screamed back at me. And then I screamed back at them. And we had like a whole set of screaming at each other. And I walked off the stage and I said to myself, the guy that owns this place is going to be so angry with me for doing that. And he came up to me and said, you're hired for the summer. And so I ended up being there the whole summer, playing in between the bands. And I started off, you know, continuing my screaming, and then it got boring. And so I started inviting the other band members up to jam with me. And we would have, at that time, jamming and improvising was not very well common in that particular location. You know, I say the Grateful Dead was the band that made jamming an art form. And so I had all these musicians, and then musicians would come down from Woodstock, and I became a legend in that town. I mean, I could still be there. I don't think the place was open, but I could have come back every summer. And I was sleeping in a tent in the backyard of the house band. And after that stint, I decided, I think I'm good enough to be successful. And I went to Los Angeles. And one of the things I started doing was writing songs to connect with that audience. And so I wrote a whole series of songs that summer. Let me see. I think one of them was, I'm going to give up all of that musty stuff, give up the SEX, give up the jealousy and avarice and seeing what happens next. But until I do, while I'm here with you, we got to get things loose. So give me that one last fling. And of course, this was a club where everybody was trying to pick up somebody. It was right on the border of New York and New Jersey. And people would go from New Jersey the drinking age was lower in New York. It was 18, so it would be crowded with all these young people from New Jersey. And so I haven't played one of these songs yet on these calls because I didn't think it would be good for my image. But since we're doing this topic tonight, I uploaded one of my songs from that period that became very popular in that bar audience. And I had everybody singing along. And it's like if I'm ever performing anywhere, I play this song and it automatically wins the crowd because it's a sing-along. And when I am in unsophisticated audiences, I would announce it and say, this is a song about sex. And when I'm in sophisticated audiences, I would say, this is a song about reincarnation. And it's called Do It Till You're Sick of It. And here we go. Let's see. Hope it works.
Everybody's got their little weakness, and temptation will point to the fun. But you'll never find out where temptation will lead you if you're stuck in your imagination. So go out and get the experience, or if you want, just stay home in your bed. Gotta live out your fantasies, fulfill your desires, let them get out of your head. So baby, do it till you're sick of it. Do it till you can't stand no more. Do it till you're sick of it. Do it till it becomes boring. Everybody's got their perversion, something in the closet they hide. Everybody needs some diversion, something to occupy their time. And there are those folks that might make their judgments. They will try and make you feel the guilt, but I say, do it till you're sick of it. Do it till you're filled to the hill. Oh, baby, do it till you're sick of it. Do it till you can't stand no more. Do it till you're sick of it. Do it till it becomes boring. Now I'd like to tell you about a stipulation, one you may already know. Don't hurt nobody when you're doing it. Don't let nobody hurt you. Yes, I'd like to tell you about an exception where the stipulation might be at fault. Simple pleasure's okay. That is your bag, as long as you're consenting adult. So, baby, do it till you're sick of it. Do it till you can't stand no more. Do it till you're sick of it. Till it becomes boring. Yeah, do it till you think of it. Do it till you can't stand no more. Do it till you think of it. Do it till it becomes boring. Oh, do it till you think of it.
Lucy, are you there? I'm going to unmute everybody. Lucy, are you there, Lucy?
Yes, I'm here. Yes, I'm here. I love that song. I love the song. I love all the songs that you sing.
That's why I asked you. I figured you'd say something good.
Oh, yeah, it's wonderful. Yeah. It was really catchy, too.
Could you understand the lyrics?
Yes.
Okay.
Do it till you're sick of it.
Right. And I mean, it was. I'm sure the people in that bar did not understand the lyrics, but it didn't matter because as soon as the cops could do it till you're sick of it, everyone in the bar was singing, "Do it."
It's great.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Did anyone else relate to the lyrics? Uh-oh. No one's going to talk to me.
I really liked it. I don't know if I've ever heard it before, but I really love it. It's got good tempo and everything.
Mm. Well, we got that bar feel to it towards the end, right?
Right.
It's a good way to get those things out of one system.
I can relate to it in terms of reincarnation.
Right. Who was that? Morgan?
That was Julia.
Julia. Hi, Julia.
Hi, Wynn.
Yeah. It's nice to hear your voice with a little bit of uptone to it.
Thank you, honey. It's good to hear your voice, too.
All right.
I like
Are
it.
You?
I'm
going
to stick a 3D.
Who was that that said they liked it?
I did. Dharmananda.
Dharmananda. Oh, hi, Dharmananda.
Hey,
I keep thinking about you. That could be a good sign or a bad sign, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's see.
Wynn?
Yeah.
I really like the piano. Who's doing the piano?
Is that Lisa?
Yes.
That's a guy that lives in Sedona. His name is Steve. And we, a few years ago, we worked out some songs together. And I was thinking of going out and doing some gigs here in Sedona, but I didn't do it. But we did go and do some recording.
Uh-huh.
Steve, what's Steve's last name, Jerry? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
He's a great piano player. He could play. He could fit into anything, and come up with really great backup lines fast. We had fun together. When I have more time, I would. He's definitely a guy I would do some recording with. Anyone else?
I play drums.
Who is that? Plays drums. Well, come move to Sedona. We'll call ourselves the Yellow He-Nets.
Okay. Yeah, I learned to play the djembe.
With who?
You ever heard the djembe drum, the African drums?
Yeah, I did.
That's what I.
Who is that? Who is that? That's confessing to playing drums?
Dharmananda.
Dharmananda. Oh, okay. Can you play a trap set as well?
I never have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I can hit drums better.
All right. I'm going to mute everybody. And now, I tell you, I could spend the whole hour telling you all the dumb things we've done. But I'd like you all to take an advantage. Because, you see, even speaking up and talking about something you've done that you're afraid to do that worked out well or didn't work out well or that you backed off, just the fact that you're sharing it is helping to process it, and you're helping to process it for everybody because everybody is like this. Everybody is afraid of making mistakes, and particularly making mistakes publicly, like when we're on this show and we have hundreds of people listening. And so when you confess, I shouldn't use the confess word, it sounds like a church. Okay, but it's like, in the highest sense, I can understand the idea of confession. I understand it because it's a way of releasing oneself from the guilt, if there's guilt there, or the embarrassment, or whatever, from things you've done. And maybe, usually, it could be forgiving yourself, and could be, I'll tell you, I won't tell you that. I'm not going to take up the whole time, because I want, it's like 6:30, we have another 25 minutes, and I want you guys to have a chance to speak up. Then if nobody speaks up, I'll take up the whole time. Or Terry, well, you know, if Terry goes, she'll go for a few hours. But
well, you could tell him about the time he broke the window.
No, don't tell him that. It's a whole other story. Okay. So, let's see. And who has the courage to share something? Star 6. Come on.
Now, may I jump in, Vin? What I want to share is with what the issue, what you just talked about with releasing stuff by speaking it out. That's something that I really myself have learned in a personal relationship, that sometimes you know, I'm always trying to like fix things, you know, talk about it to fix it, but it's just to shut up and just listen, just pay attention. Mm-hmm. And that is way more important than trying to fix it.
You're talking about with your wife.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's a different situation, okay?
but what I'm saying is that with
instead of
saying you know, the things you have done that you regret, it is just, you know, speaking it out will do it. You can even talk to a tree or something.
Right. Well, people can pick and choose what they want to share. It could be something you regretted doing, the guy you screwed up. It could be something that you didn't do, that you wanted to do, but you're afraid to do it because people might judge you. It could be something that that you did and got you in trouble and got everybody judging you, got people, you know, and that you said, I'll never do that again, and you retreated. Those, you know, we're creating like a loving space where people can share those things. And you see, notice how quiet the line is, how scary it is to even say, geez, if I talk, I'm going to make a mistake, then I'm going to embarrass myself. So you guys got to push through that. We're not going to make fun of you. Whatever you did is going to be okay in this environment. Okay?
When, you know, Francis.
Yes, I hear you, Francis.
This is Francis, yes. And let me tell you what the imprinting did for me. My parents had what I call Ronald Reagan, Nancy Reagan relationship. They were very devoted to each other, and everyone else was locked out. And on a nightly or at least every other night basis, my father would look across the dining room table and say to my mother, to the two daughters, Anne and Frances, if you can be half as good as your mother, you'll be all right. And we heard this, as I said, almost nightly. And what it caused for me, the strain, was that I was a severe stutterer for 26 years. And I bit my nails to the quick for 26 years.
Did you get over it?
So, I went on to, did I get over the perfectionism? No. I would always, if my mother was to visit, I always had like placemats, two sets of placemats identical, one for every day and one for when mom came. But she had she would see the unblemished ones, things like that. But I noticed I was doing over the years.
Hello?
Okay. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Go ahead. Next. Let me just tell Francis, thank you, Francis, for sharing that and having the courage to say it, okay? Thank you. And
thank you, Francis.
Well, it's nice to have finally figured it out after 70 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's hard to figure those things out. They're just right there.
Yes.
Okay. And who else wanted to share?
I have something.
And who is that?
Matt.
Yeah, it was
Matt. I thought it was you.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Matt.
When I was
I want to thank you for coming forth and picking up, because I know you're shy and reserved.
Yeah.
And so it's really good that you're, you know, this is like not a small deal doing this. I mean, when you get a chance to do this, it's putting you in a loving space where you can be willing to be vulnerable, and we're only going to make fun of you when you're finished, okay?
Mine's kind of embarrassing. I'm in college now, but when I was in high school, I was swimming my first year, like, competitively, and I was doing, I hadn't practiced that, there was a lapse in when I was practicing, so I was out of shape pretty much, and when I was doing the breaststroke, or not the breaststroke, the freestyle, and during the race, I was so nervous that my breath was out of tempo, and I was like swallowing water, and I just couldn't catch my breath. So I had to like stop in the middle of the race and get out of the pool. Like once I got to the other side, and all the parents were like looking at me in the audience, and one of the lifeguards like actually came up to me and said like, "Do you need your inhaler?" And I said, "I don't have an inhaler. I don't have asthma. I was just like out of breath." So it was embarrassing. I had to like pump my chest, I didn't want to go back to swim the next time after that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Hey, Matt, can I tell people how you and I got connected?
Yeah, with context, because I don't mind.
Okay, I think it's a good story because, you know, there's people that make donations, and we try to notice them and send thank yous, and we really, really appreciate it. Well, one day, we got an email from somebody that said, "Could you please send me all my donations back?" And that's all the email said.
Yeah.
And I was, like, ready to send all his donations back. I think it was about $100. And I decided to say, I wonder who this person is. And I started searching, Googling his name.
Yeah, I was on.
And I think the first thing we found was a picture of you running. Okay.
Okay.
Isn't there a picture of you running?
Yeah.
With a flag around your flag on your head or something? Or
maybe.
Well, in any case, I found a picture of this guy, and he looked kind of angry. And I said, "Oh my God, maybe he's going to come after us." I said, "You know, maybe he's crazy." And then I kept searching, and then I found these beautiful, sensitive writings that this guy did. Really sensitive, really good. And because I was thinking, I'm not going to email him. I mean, I'm going to get stuck in something if I email him. I'll just give him his money back. But when I found the stuff that he had written, posted, I emailed him because I said, "He's a really sensitive guy." And he emailed me back, and we started getting into a rapport. And eventually he said, "Well, you don't have to give me the money back." And, you know, we created more of a connection. And so the fact that he did that, and the fact that I did the search on the internet, and the fact that I acknowledged him. You know, I know that's important. It's very important. Many of you feel like you're anonymous out there. Now, you, in some ways, you're anonymous, and in another way, we feel your energy. And I started to explain how that works, but we do feel it. Your energy is really here. But I would like to have the time to say, okay, I'm going to just call people today. I'm going to say hello to them. Because that's, I mean, I like that. And I think Matt is an incredible guy. I know he's shy. I know he's working his stuff out. But he is deep, and he is talented. And in some ways, he reminds me of myself when I was younger, where I could write really good things, but on a personal level, I didn't know how to be present with people. And so I connect with him as a creative guy. You want to share something about all that, Matt?
Well, I definitely agree. And when you email me back, we have been talking, but then you said it's kind of like the guitar string breaking. And at first I thought that was kind of like an insult because, like, on my mental health, on the status of my mental health. Then you clarified that and said that it was, you had mentioned on one of your calls that you had gone to see musicians play, and they were kind of, it was kind of flat until their guitar string broke, which gave them a prelude to start talking, and then you could start connecting with them on a deeper level. And so, like, me asking for the donations was kind of like the guitar string breaking, and I thought that was pretty cool. And I'm actually lucky to have found you and your work. It was from George Norrie in 2012, I think. And I was just kind of searching, like, I grew up a Roman Catholic, so I had, like, a lot of the propaganda, or not propaganda, but the, I guess you call it, imprinting from that. And so I was raised Catholic in the fear-based kind of faith. And then I found, you know, evolution and turned to science to explain pretty much everything. And I felt like the only thing I could see and sense was, you know, the air reductionism and Newtonianism. And then I found spirituality and meditation, and that was kind of my intrude into a deeper way of looking at things. So I think I'm at a good place now in my life from where I was.
Do you have a website? Hey, Matt, do you have a website where some of your writing is up?
Well, yeah, writing.com. But it's not my website. It's just a profile on me. It's writing.com. I think the handle is, couldn't think of a handle, is how you might be able to find me.
What is it?
Writing.com, and then couldn't think of a handle is my username.
Can you think of a handle?
Couldn't think of a handle.
Couldn't think of a handle, okay?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were telling me that you couldn't think of a name to put up, okay? Couldn't think of a handle. So you go to writing.com and do a search and couldn't think
of a handle.
Couldn't think of a handle.
Yeah.
You can read some of Matt's writings, and he's actually good. He is really deep, and really, he is real aware of the underlying patterns go through things.
Thanks.
In spite of the fact that he's still working himself out.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So I can relate to you completely because I spent years of my life just like that, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
So thank you for coming up and sharing
sure.
that. Okay. And anyone else?
Yeah, Lynn.
Yeah. Who is that?
Hello?
Michael.
Oh.
Michael. That's what I thought. I thought it was you, Michael. Go ahead.
Yeah.
What would you like to share?
Last Saturday at 10:30 in the morning, I had turned on my meditation section of my computer, and I was very surprised to find a lady saying, "We are the on group members, along with the Elohim." And she said it a couple of times, and I thought, must be Wynn. I must have copied him somewhere. So I flipped it off, went back to try to get my particular recording that I wanted to play.
And now, what were you listening to? Michael, tell me again. What were you listening to?
I was trying to listen to recording of a meditation, but I couldn't get it because this voice kept coming on saying, "We are beyond group members along with the Elohim," and I couldn't find where that was, so I turned it off for a while, and then I turned it back on. Then I got my recording, and I was thinking to myself, let me try that again and again. I could never get it again. And I thought, oh, boy, did I miss out on something. Well, today, of all things, this friend of mine who had been my landlady and her husband, who had been landlord some 15 years ago, they had split up and the family was falling apart, and except the wife kept them together, and he was not an easy guy to work alongside, never mind. He had gone off astray, and now he came back because he shifted, and he says, "Tell Michael that I'm really sorry about the way I treated him." And I said, "I never held anything against you, you know." And he was very thankful. But at the same time, his wife tells me, "You felt like a jellyfish the way that the long white umbilical cord was extending from his abdominal region outward, and some other cords were extending from his chest outward." And he says he wasn't ready for this, but it changed him. He let go of all the fears he had, and he went back to the parents of the girl he married, and he said to them, "It was all fear." He said, "That's all it was fear." And he says, "It's all out." So he's changed from the way he was to what he is now. Now he can go over and hug a tree, and he can have joy with his children and his wife, and he's totally a very changed individual. I don't know what's going on.
Well, you know what? I don't even know what's going on. People think I do. I don't know what's going on. I'm sitting here, and I'm just on a train and saying, what's the next stop? You know, Michael is a very sensitive guy. He talks, he's got a group of people on the other side that are working with him, and he does sometimes counseling and healings for people. And some of the people he's worked with in our group have had some good results of having a connection with him. So, Michael, I thank you for sharing, okay? And,
okay.
Anyone else? I'll tell you, it feels really good when you do this. Who is that?
Lisa.
Yes, Lisa. Hi, Lisa. I'm so glad you're going to say something.
I'm going to say that there was someone in my life who thought I was anything but perfect, and that was my mother. My mother criticized me from morning to night on a daily basis. And she would yell and scream at me and never look me in the eyes very much. Sometimes she'd pin me up against the wall or the kitchen sink and yell at me so loud I thought I was going to eliminate, go to the bathroom in my path. And she just criticized every single thing. And she would do it publicly also. We'd be in a store, and she'd start yelling across some racks of clothes in a really angry tone and very demeaning. And I just, I'd either shrink, or one time when I got older, I'd just yell back at her. But she was emotionally and verbally abusive to me. If she lost her hairbrush, it was my fault. And it stayed my fault until she found it, Like, I would say, "Mom, I have no idea where your hairbrush is. I haven't seen it." She would say, "You're lying." why would I lie about a hairbrush? And then, you know, if she found it, she had to admit it, that she's the one who misplaced it. She would look at me like she hated me, like she was sorry she ever had me. I do have a brother, and she was less criticizing of him. She took it out mostly on me, maybe because she could. And I didn't have my own power yet. I didn't. She caught me when I was young, and I didn't have my power. So anyway, and then she'd get real mad if I went. I went to a girlfriend's house for 3 nights. We used to have fun. Girlfriends do that. You stay over at each other's places and get up and go to work or school together, and we just like doing that. And so one time I was with my best friend for 3 nights, and when I came home, I was all relaxed, and I think I had a smile on my face. She couldn't stand the smile, and she just said, she put her hands on her hips and just said, boy, you know, you can just go away and think nothing of it. It was hell being with her. It was absolute hell, and I think I just had a few smiles.
I was just going to say, I think your mother and Terry's mother should have known each other.
Hmm. anyway, they would, you know, I could go on and on complaining about how she complained about me.
Mm-hmm.
You're not the only one.
Just wanted to say that I was, as a result, I never talked because I could say, boy, the sky looks pretty blue today, and she'd talk in a yelling tone or criticize me. So I learned to not talk. And I even used to hang out with my friends and be, like, overly demure and and performed. You know, then I was on stage singing or dancing and even playing the drums myself a little. And that's when I would come alive. Anyway.
You were playing drums. Look, speaking of drums, don't go away, Lisa. You stay on the line a moment. I want to see, is Dharmananda there? Do a star six. Dharmananda? Are you there, Dharmananda?
Yeah.
You're there?
You hear me?
Now, yeah. Can I put you on the spot? Is it okay? Should I call you Dharmananda or Carl?
Okay.
Which
Dharmananda.
One? Dharmananda.
Dharmananda.
Dharmananda. Okay. Now, I'm going to do something really spontaneous here. I'm putting you on the spot. I'm putting Lisa on the spot. Is that okay, Lisa?
Sure, why not?
Well, you can say no. Let me tell you what it is, and then you can say no. Because I can't do it without your permission, all right? Dharmananda has been emailing me, and we talked. And the way that I understand it is that he's kind of like a product of the 60s. He's studied a lot of spiritual things. He's done yoga. Am I right so far?
Yeah.
Coming up? Yeah. And he has integrated the Christed energy. He says that, okay? I think he has, but, you know. And he goes down. He lives near Santa Cruz, and he goes into public places, and he's been doing healings on people in public places. And people have had pain go away. Am I right there? You want to share a little bit about that, Dharmananda?
Yeah, that's true. I've had several people, you know, I started with my friends, and asked if they had pain, I asked if I could do a prayer for them, and I, you know, touched them and do a prayer, and the pain would go away. And then I went down to the farmer's market a couple of times and asked some people there if they had pain, and the ones that did, I did the same thing, and their pain went away. It was really fantastic to see that works, really, you know, because I hadn't done that since I was in my 20s, and I just started doing it again.
Now, you never had, like, a big miracle, like you touched somebody and their cancer went away or anything like that, right?
Not that I'm aware of.
Not that you're aware of. Here is the deal. We don't have a lot of time, so let me just, it's 6:53. We have about 4 or 5 minutes. It's not a lot of time, but Lisa has been in pain, and she is going through. Can I talk about it, Lisa?
Yeah.
She has kind of all these things going on in her body. She's have nurses coming over. Are you in pain, Lisa?
Yeah.
You want to share where your pain is?
My pain is throughout my entire body.
Okay. So I was going to have Dharmananda, and you know, we have no expectation. You don't have to feel like you're proving yourself here, Dharmananda. But here, let him cast his energy and see if anything shifts. Is that okay with you, Lisa?
Sure. Sounds good.
Okay. Okay. Dharmananda, is there anything you want to ask her before you start?
Is it arthritis or what?
I have a long list of, like a cluster of diseases is what I have, including autoimmune disease, lupus, scleroderma, diabetes, heart disease, chronic pain for 30 years, goes on and on, gastrointestinal problems, circulatory, it's about everything. It sounds like
well,
you do a general.
We only have like 3 minutes, but Lisa, if you feel an energy connection and you email me, I will send your email to Dharmananda, and you guys can hook up outside of the show. Okay.
Okay.
How's that sound? So Dharmananda, you got 3 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay. In the name of Jesus Christ. And by the power of God within me and within all of us, I command that all the sickness and disease be gone from Lisa's body now. Feel anything, Lisa? Did you feel anything, Lisa?
Just the spread of goosebumps. Spread of goosebumps. Somewhere in the middle of my body and went, you know, down to my toes and up to my head.
Okay.
Because that's quite a thought for me.
I could feel the beautiful energy that came through when you did that, you know?
It just sounds exactly like what I want. And what I've been talking to my angels about, and sometimes when I get angry and I'm alone, I just yell out, I just want it all to go away. That's what I want to die. You know, sometimes I think I want me to die just so I won't feel all this, but it's not me that wants to die. I want the illnesses to die. You know, so that definitely gave me goosebumps.
Well, Lisa, you email me if you'd like to make a connection, and then if Dharmananda, you know, wants to free willingly reach back, he can. Okay?
Okay.
Just send me your phone number.
You.
I'll call you.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, not over the not live here, but thank you, Dharmananda. Thank you, Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
And thank all of you. And this is a great show. And again, it was like a constant guitar string breaking. And this was you guys coming forth. Thank every one of you who made a contribution on this show. And when we do these and you have the opportunity to do that, please take advantage. Push yourself through your resistance. Don't worry about how people think of you. Don't worry. This is exactly what you're supposed to go through. Not worrying what people think and allowing yourself to be vulnerable to the energy that's present here, because it allows it to connect with you more. And of course, we're not talking about it, but we got a lot of high sources, as you well know, that are paying attention to us. And every time you step into the ring, into the spotlight, they're watching. So don't miss those opportunities. And on that note, thank you all. We'll see you Wednesday when you submit questions. And I got to cut off at 6:50. Who is that?
Is Armalanda, can he give Francis his phone number?
email me, give me your phone number, Francis, and I'll forward it to him, okay?
Okay. 925.
Terminada, you may, don't say it on the air now. just email me.
No.
Terry knows. Terry, I have your number, okay?
Okay.
I have your number, Francis. So I'll forward it to him. Dharmananda, you may get a lot of people wanting you to do that. Listen, if he suddenly gets deluded and he does something and it works, feel free to offer a donation, okay? Because he's not a rich guy. And so, that's a way of reciprocating. But not up front. You know, do it after the fact, out of gratitude, okay? if something helps. So that way, he doesn't have to feel like he has to perform. But if something happens and something works, out of gratitude, thank him for his time. And I'm going to unmute everybody. Everyone's unmuted. And if anyone else wants Dharmananda to call him, just send me an email. And is that okay with you, Dharmananda?
That's fine.
Okay.
I'm busy.
Good.